We read the first 18 verses. Proverbs 29, verse 1 to 18. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. The king by judgment establisheth the land, but he that receiveth gifts overthroweth it. A man that flattereth his neighbour spreadeth a net for his feet. In the transgression of an evil man there is a snare, but the righteous doth sing and rejoice. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. Scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. The bloodthirsty hate the upright, but the just seek his soul. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. If a ruler hearken to lies, all his servants are wicked. The poor and the deceitful man meet together. The Lord lighteneth both their eyes. The king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Amen. May God bless to us the reading of his word. Well, our subject this evening is internet blogging and the Christian. Internet blogging and the Christian. I'm sure we've all heard of the internet. Perhaps we don't all use it, and it has to be said that the internet has been used for much evil, and it is true to say that one of the major uses of the internet, sadly, is the conveying of pornography. Nevertheless, though that is the case, it can be used for good reasons, for good purpose, and indeed it is used in many ways that are beneficial. Now, first of all, I better explain what a blog is. Not that I'm really that any expert at all. It's a shortened form, I think, of the word web blog or web log, and so a blog is a log kept on the internet, in which the individual, I suppose initially the idea that was, the individual keeps a log of daily events and thoughts and so on, and this has been broadened out to posting all sorts of items among Christians, doctrinal material, book reviews, discussions of doctrinal matters, and usually a blog has scope for others to comment, and there is discussion and debate. Also, as well as blogs, there are online discussion forums, and I'm sure some of the younger folk know far more about these things than I do. But in Christian sites on the web, there are all sorts of discussion groups where all kinds of things can be discussed, including biblical teaching, current church affairs. Some of these are closed discussion groups, but very often they are open to anyone with a computer and the necessary connection that they can then access these discussion groups or blogs, as the case may be. Now, my purpose tonight is not to discuss the technicalities of these things, but simply to make it clear to, for those who are not familiar with these things, that the internet and the whole blog and discussion group situation, that it involves debate, people typing in contributions, posts, as I call it, and discussing matters of mutual interest, and that generally these are accessible to anyone in the world with a computer connected to the internet. And so my concern this evening is to look at the matter of the use of the internet what it means when personal, church, and doctrinal matters are discussed on the internet and are open to the view of anyone who wishes to come online and see them. So I hope we're all clear what it is we're dealing with. We're dealing with discussions on the internet between people who may not know each other, who may live in different parts of the world, discussions that can be viewed by anyone else who chooses to log in to that particular discussion group or blog. Now, it has to be said that there are good things done by this means, and the internet generally, as we said, has been used in many good ways by Christians. A friend of mine once said that the internet was the nearest thing to a level playing field in the media. And he said that because what he meant was that as far as television, the press, what you say can be distorted, you don't have a free hand, it can be edited, or you can be limited, whereas on the internet, you can say what you like. And Christians have used this to good effect, and there is much useful Christian material on the internet, both on websites, discussion forums, and including blogs. There are many sound biblical and reformed sermons that can be not only read but listened to, and of course we as a church have engaged in this ourselves. So there's a great deal of material available on the internet that is of benefit to the people of God. Others, including Christians, use it as a means of contacting others, and among Christians this can be a very good thing. There are blogs in which people share common interests, or blogs in which people encourage one another in rearing their children and this sort of thing. And these can be very helpful to the Lord's people. Our purpose, however, is to draw attention to some biblical principles of speech which need to be kept in mind when blogging or engaging in online discussion. So what we have in view is the manner in which Christians engage in discussion by typing in, putting on a particular discussion group or blog, contributions in a discussion on particular matters. And that this is done, when this is done, it is visible to anyone who wants to go online. That's the point we want to emphasize, that these discussion groups are generally open to anyone to see what has been said and by whom it has been said in any particular discussion. And it's very easy to forget that the World Wide Web is the World Wide Web. That if you put something on a discussion group, an open discussion group, or on someone's blog, it is there. The whole world may not be interested, but anyone who wants to can see what you put on the internet, on the particular site or blog. So then, we look at certain aspects of this particular practice. First of all, motive. Motive. Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. The scriptures teach, whatsoever ye do, whether ye eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. This includes blogging and internet discussion, the putting of material on the internet. The aim must be the glory of God. Let us consider various sub-points under this main point. First of all, anonymous posting. Sometimes people put comments anonymously on the internet. Now, we don't say that there is never a time for anonymity, but our forefathers, generally speaking, did not act anonymously. Occasionally, they did. For example, when their life was in danger or when it would endanger others, they did sometimes write things anonymously. But generally speaking, they didn't. And even at great risk and cost to themselves, they didn't. The Covenanters, the early Covenanters, believed in witness bearing, and they were ready to, and they often used this language, to seal their testimony, by which they meant they were prepared to seal what they'd written with their blood, if need be. And you find among the Covenanters that rarely did they engage in anonymous witness bearing. They declared the truth and suffered the consequences. Now, there may be occasions which justify anonymity. Sometimes it can express modesty. Sometimes it can be to protect others who may be affected. But generally, it is an expression of cowardice and of desire to avoid consequences and accountability. You say something on the internet anonymously, nobody knows who said it. But Christians have renounced the hidden things of dishonesty and darkness and should unashamedly own the truth, especially when the consequences are not life-threatening. What we are writing is something of which we have reason to be ashamed of, then don't write it. But otherwise, write it and own it as your own, as what you believe to be true. Then there is the danger of self-publicizing. Anyone can say what they like on the internet. And this is a great danger, to want to draw attention to ourselves, to pretend to be what we aren't, to be gratified by the attention that we may receive, which in any other format or setting we would never have. And so there is a danger of self-publicizing. Then there is a danger of escapism. It is not escapism to enjoy contact with other people, and for shy people, they can find legitimate enjoyment in internet discussion. But it should not be a substitute for all face-to-face contact, at least when face-to-face contact can be done. If someone's people skills, as they now call it, their ability to be amongst people and to talk with people are limited, they're hardly going to be improved by sitting at a computer keyboard. In Proverbs 27 and verse 17, we read, "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend." Discussion on computer is not the same as face-to-face fellowship. There is a completeness of fellowship in face-to-face contact, where we can see the visible reaction of the person. We can gauge how a discussion is going. We can sense if it's time to ease off. We can perceive many things in discussion face-to-face that we do not in an internet situation. And something is lost if all we ever do is have contact through the internet. So there is no substitute for face-to-face contact and fellowship. And so finally on this point, we must aim at the glory of God. If you can't blog or engage in forum discussion for God's glory, then don't do it. So there we have aim or motive. Secondly, biblical standards of speech apply to this form of communication. Biblical standards of speech apply to this form of communication. First of all, there must be truthfulness. This is basic, the ninth commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness. All that we say must be true. Lying is always wrong. God cannot lie, and we should not lie. Then secondly, thoughtfulness. If you're going to engage in posting on the internet, think before posting. What we say, and therefore what we put on the internet, must not only be factually true, but it must be balanced enough to be just and fair. We can be selective with facts. And although we don't say anything that is actually untrue in itself, we create an impression that is contrary to fact. The larger catechism, and it's speaking of sins forbidden in the ninth commandment, answer 145, speaks of prejudicing the good name of our neighbour. And we can do that without actually making any false statement, any statement false in itself, but simply by giving certain facts and not others. And if we do have to oppose someone or criticize someone, if we have to be negative, or if we are negative, does it have to be said? Or is it just an expression of pride in order to feel good at our own assumed superiority? You see, the pride of man makes every one of us want people that we can look down on. Every one of us. We want people who are inferior so that we can compare ourselves with them. And it's very easy in speech, but even more in the remoteness of the internet, to engage in that, to say something, not seeking anyone's good, but only as an expression of our own pride. Is it rejoicing in iniquity? Do we love what is of good report? Or do we rejoice to seize hold of something that we can pour scorn upon? And yes, this is just everyday communication principles, applied to this particular form of communication. Then there is the question, is there a breach of confidentiality? Either explicit, because something has been told in confidence, and then it's put on the internet where anybody can see it. That is a gross breach of trust, but it does happen. Or if not explicitly so, is it implicitly a breach of confidence? Did the person who told you that thing really expect you to put it on the World Wide Web? Or if it's not something they told you, it's just something about someone else? Would they really be happy that you make it known to whoever wants to see it? Even though it may be true. You see, some people think as long as what they say is true, then nothing else matters. But that isn't the case. The larger catechism, answer 145 that I mentioned earlier, speaks of speaking the truth unseasonably. It is not legitimate to say everything that could be said that is true at every time or in every situation. And it's not everything that is true that should be broadcast to the world. In Proverbs 29, verse 11, which we read earlier, it says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. If you use the internet, you'll know that there are fools, and they pour everything out on the World Wide Web. People like that don't deserve to have any friends. Who would tell someone something private if they are likely to broadcast it to the world? And then charity, Christian love. Christian discussion can be very beneficial, but it must be remembered that the restraints on internet discussion are much lower than they are in face-to-face speech. Often the discussion is completely anonymous. That is, the person we're discussing with, we don't know them, we don't know anything about them, we don't know their circumstances, we don't know their distresses, we don't know their sensitivities, and yet we can just blast away and we don't know what we're doing. We don't know the effect at the other end, how well they can cope with severe comments. You see, the discussion is depersonalized, and so it leaves the way open for great potential clumsiness, because it's a very easy form of communication, but it doesn't have the restraints that face-to-face communication has. We all know that it's harder to say something unpleasant face-to-face. Sometimes it has to be done. But it's harder to do, isn't it? To look someone in the eye and tell them what you know they don't really want to hear. But it has to be done. Sometimes Christians have to do that. Ministers have to do it. Elders have to do it. And I'm sure we've all come across what we might call mantelpiece rhetoric. People standing at their own mantelpiece in front of their own fire, and they're very bold about what they will tell so-and-so and how they're going to confront them. And then when they do meet them, it all just vanishes and they splutter and say nothing. Now that can be a bad thing or a good thing. What they were going to say, maybe they shouldn't say. And when they meet the person and they find some of the qualities of the person, they rightly back away from what they are going to say. On the other hand, it can be just cowardice, and that all that was said about what they were going to say was just bravado and bluster. But on the internet, there's none of that restraint which involves knowing the person at the other end. And that's why there must be caution. We may not know them at all, and we certainly can't see them. And that means extra care is needed. Another factor is the watching world. Theoretically, anyone in the world could be reading what you say on the internet. The spectacle, even of reformed ministers tearing into each other with vitriol and viciousness about a matter that isn't even of public nature. This is shameful. You know that on the website there are what are called ex-Christian sites. Of course, you know someone who is born of the Spirit will be kept, and they may backslide, but they'll ultimately be kept by the power of God. But there are people who profess to be Christians, or they've been brought up in Christian homes, and now they have renounced Christianity, they hate the gospel, and they have ex-Christian sites in which they post every scandal in the church that they can find. If they can find a story of a minister who's gone off the rails morally or something of that sort, on it goes. They love this stuff. They love to read ministers laying into each other about something that's not a public issue. So we need care on account of these things. And then there is the use of the internet and of discussion groups to find out what other people are saying. We don't actually always need to know what everyone else is saying, not even about us. You see, our pride makes us think that knowing what other people think or say is always a bonus. The reason for that is that in our vanity, we think we can always handle it. That if it isn't useful, well, it's not harmful. And so we assume that maximum knowledge of what other people have said is at best useful, or at least it won't do us any harm. We can handle it. But the truth is, we can't. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 21. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 21. Also, take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. Hearing everything isn't always beneficial. Here it's the servant curses his master. Perhaps in a moment of irritation, the master hears it. In actual fact, the servant may have a high regard for his master. That's his settled opinion. But in a moment of frustration, he speaks against him. And once heard, how difficult it is to get it out of your mind. How difficult it is to get rid of it, or to treat it as only a momentary blip. It keeps coming into your mind. You heard what someone said about you, and you know that's not their constant opinion of you, and yet what they said, it keeps coming back, it keeps hurting. It isn't true that hearing everything is automatically a good thing. And that's true on the internet. And it isn't always a good thing to know everything that everybody has said about it. I once heard someone say, wouldn't it be great if we could all read each other's minds all the time? Well, it wouldn't. It would be dreadful. Dreadful. And if that's true of what we think, it's also true of the fact that sometimes our thoughts come into words that are hasty and only give a momentary and wrong view of what we think in the cold light of day. The idea that everyone pouring everything out on the internet and everyone having access to it is not a healthy thing at all, especially if people just rattle off whatever their reaction to something is. They haven't thought about it, they haven't given it care and prayerful thought, and they just rattle off something about someone else, and this is not beneficial. So even be careful how much you find out about what other people think of you on the internet. But then thirdly, the third main point, the danger of internet pseudo-martyrdom. The danger of internet pseudo-martyrdom. We've referred to this before at times in preaching, so we'll not labour the point. There is a place for bearing testimony to the truth on the internet. But you don't actually have to look at anybody on the internet. The blog, the discussion group poster rarely knows anything about the people he's engaged with. He doesn't know who they are, his opponents that he debates with, he doesn't know them, he doesn't see them. And yet, you can kid yourself. I'm not saying we shouldn't bear testimony on the internet, but you can kid yourself that you've fulfilled the full measure of confronting a hostile world by using the internet. That if you spend enough hours contending on the internet, that there you are. You've championed the cause of truth. But you see, John Knox didn't confront Mary, Queen of Scots, by computer. He actually stood in front of her and told her the truth. And she had the power to have him arrested. John Calvin didn't confront the libertines in the council at Geneva, the city council, by internet. He actually stood amongst them and said, right, if you want my blood, here it is. And he opened his coat and said, here, there's some here. When he confronted the same men in the church, who wanted to break the discipline of the church, and they came with their swords. He said, he put his hands over the bread and wine and said, you can jump off my hands if you want. I won't give that which is holy to the profane. He looked at them. He was in danger. So don't think you can be a hero for the faith simply by using the internet. We have to face people We have to look people in the eye and tell them the truth, whether it's contending with the world or against corruption in the church or whatever. Yes, uphold the truth on the internet, but don't imagine that that's all we need to do, and that we've been a martyr and a hero for the faith, that we've actually had to face nobody. Fourthly, stewardship of time. Stewardship of time. A disproportionate amount of time posting on the internet is not consistent with redeeming the time. It may be that we're always going for the soft option. Never mind helping bring the gospel to the people in the district face to face. Let's just spend the time on the computer evangelizing people we don't know where they are. Well, there's a place for that, but that's not all. It may also mean that you've become addicted. Say, what, addicted to using a computer? Of course, we're capable of being addicted to anything. People can become addicted to the most trivial things. Because we're sinners. The scripture says, Proverbs 10:19, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. There should be restraint in the use of the internet, so that our lives are not, we're not living in an unreal world where our time is spent at the computer keyboard. I know some of you have jobs, you have to spend lots of hours at computer keyboard, but presumably not engaging in discussion groups and web blogs. But we mustn't have our life wrapped up in this remote form of communication. And when it comes to the Sabbath, I don't say there are no legitimate uses of a computer on the Sabbath, especially people who can't get to the assemblies of God's people, just as in the past they would use a tape recorder or a CD player, they can listen to sermons on the computer. But posting on websites, typing away on the Lord's Day. You know, the Westminster standards tell us that the Sabbath is for public and private exercises of God's worship, except so much as the time as may be taken up in works of necessity and mercy. All right, the directory for public worship, which the Westminster Assembly produced, it does give some latitude outside specific ordinances of worship, what we might call more informal edification. It says that the time vacant between the solemn meetings of the congregation in public be spent in reading, meditation, repetition of sermons, especially by calling their families to account of what they have heard, and catechizing of them, holy conferences, prayer for a blessing upon the public ordinances, singing of psalms, visiting the sick, relieving the poor, and such like duties of piety, charity, and mercy, as counting the Sabbath a delight. There's enough there to fill our Sabbaths without turning on the computer to do a bit of blogging on the Lord's Day. As I say, there are certain things, listening to sermons, that sort of thing, but generally speaking, leave it turned off. Give your keyboard fingers a rest on the Lord's Day. Don't become obsessed with the internet. Then fifthly, the danger of encroaching on the role of the ministry. The danger of encroaching on the role of the ministry. There is a legitimate mutual exhortation among Christians, seeking one another's good, seeking one another's edification. Godly conferences, as the directory calls it. The public preaching of the word is the work of the ministers of the word. The oversight of that public preaching is the responsibility of all the elders. Applying this to the internet is not that easy. There is the need not to squash Christian fellowship and mutual edification and encouragement. But at the same time, because of the public nature of the internet, the extreme public nature of the internet, there is need for caution. Yes, every Christian has a role in spreading the truth, spreading the gospel to the ungodly. But on the other hand, the internet can give a place to wolves in sheep's clothing. Men who want to lead the people of God astray. Men who would never be allowed into the pulpit of a Reformed church. And yet, members of the Reformed church, they suck in this poison that they're feeding over the internet. Or else, a novice can have an influence through the internet that he would never be allowed to have in the Church of God, in the real, visible body of God's people. And with the internet, there isn't even the restraint of the printed word. If someone writes something, they have to get it published. Someone has to be willing to put some money into it and get it printed. But on the internet, they don't. It costs next to nothing. There's no accountability. And so people who would never qualify for any office in the Church of God, they hold forth on all matters as self-appointed experts. There is a danger here. Without wanting to discourage Christian fellowship and discussion and edification, perhaps as a rule of thumb, it should be said that the internet should not be used by an individual to try and steer a church away from its confessional and creedal position. The self-appointed expert can float novel ideas on the internet, and they do in abundance. There's mountains of material, some of it's good, vast amounts of it are not, and people are influenced by it. And it is possible to influence the people of God, as it were, circumventing the government of the church by means of the internet. So there is a potential menace to the unity and order of the church. That can be done by speech, but it's much harder. People can subvert the church by going around spreading error, seeking to undermine the established doctrine, biblical doctrine, but they can do it much easier now on the internet. And we need to be aware of these things. No doubt a great deal more could be said, and should be said. Perhaps there needs to be more thought among God's people about how to apply the unchanging principles of God's word to this changing world of communications. The scriptures don't tell us anything about blogs or discussion forums on the internet. But they do tell us everything we need to know about how to live godly in Christ Jesus. And there must be in Scripture sufficient material to tell us how to use the internet in the fear of God. One thing is sure, even if we blog, we must glorify God in it. We must fear the Lord in all things, including our discussions on the internet.